Afternoon, and welcome to the Senior Hour, which is sponsored by Providence Holy Cross Medical Center, Hestia Med Spa, and Comfort Keepers in Home Care. I'm Barbara Cochran with my co-host,
Dr. Jean Doria,
on your hometown station, 98.1 FM, AM 1220 KHTS. This is a show for, about, and by seniors, giving information to enhance one's quality of life. And speaking of enhancing quality of life, the one and only Dr. Thomas Pawlucki is in the studio today. Hi, it's good to see you.
It's good to be here.
Welcome.
Yes. Hi, Dr. Doria.
So what's on the agenda for today, sir?
Oh, a bunch of stuff.
Oh, good. Good. Shall we name them? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5?
No.
Okay. But you're going to start out with number one.
Yeah.
Okay.
So maybe.
Well, you can always change to number 5.
There we go. I like that better. So, oh, wow. That's hot. Hot mic. Just recently published in the British Medical Journal, the Open British Medical Journal, research that has been going on for, probably in the neighborhood of 15 years. I first reported on this over a decade ago, about how grip strength is a very good prognosticator, a very good diagnostic prognosis determiner of illness and injury in the elderly. Actually, some research has shown big studies, not small studies, big studies have shown that it is, in fact, a better indicator of potential illness and injury morbidity, which is the technical term for underlying illnesses, and mortality, which is something of one of those illnesses has a good chance of killing you, than any of the vital statistics that we are currently using in this country.
Interesting.
You said grip. GRIP.
Grip strength. There have been studies on this for a very long time. Yeah. And I started in using this technology nearly a decade ago. I wrote a few blogs on it. And it kind of fell by the wayside because obviously for the past few years at least, everybody's attention has been shifted away from things like that. But the studies have been going on ever since I first reported on them, which, the first one was probably close to 15 years ago that I was aware of. And there may have been studies even before that, but I only caught on to it about 13 years ago. I found out about this. And I started using the information, not so much the way that they're using it, because they have tables. And obviously, there are tables for everything. And in doing injury work, because I do have a portion of my practice that is based on treating injured people, especially neck injuries, it's critical that you measure this statistic, this grip strength, because grip strength is not just about, well, can you actually pick something up or not, which is how it's used in like workers' compensation and personal injury. And, can you go back to the job that you were doing before? Is the dexterity, is the strength in your hand enough to be able to do your job anymore? So it's a matter of disability. However, what these other studies are showing is that it is a better prognosticator of are there underlying illnesses? Are there underlying issues that are going to ultimately cause you an untimely death? And that's the interesting thing that is essentially completely ignored in this country because we haven't established. We have the vital statistics. We like to look at things like cholesterol. We like to look at things like high blood pressure. One out of two people over 50 have high blood pressure. And one out of three of them are going to be on medication for the rest of their lives. And that's all I'm going to say about that. So there's a reason that nothing is really being done about looking at other things that may also show us something or even be a better indicator. Because, there isn't a pill you can take to improve grip strength. And there, you know, although there are exercises that you can do to improve grip strength, the researchers warn against, you know, trying to treat this symptomatically, saying, oh, well, you know, you only have, you are more than 10% less than the norm, and that is a good indicator that there is an underlying illness that can eventually lead to your untimely death. So, where do you go? It's not about, oh, well, we're just going to give you hand exercises to improve your grip strength. This is a very, it's not a specific diagnostic tool. It doesn't tell you exactly what the problem is, but it is a very sensitive diagnostic tool. Mm-hmm. It tells you that there is a problem much more accurately and much more significantly than pretty much any other vital statistic that we're currently looking at. And that's what got my attention so long ago and has been backed up in study after study after study. And the most recent one was just published recently in Open BMJ, that they followed 8,000 Americans over 50 for the past 9 years. And that's a good study. You know, there are bigger studies out there, but this is good enough. This isn't just, you know, 20 people in a group decided that this was good or bad. This is 8,000 people over a 10-year period were monitored with this, and they found that it is a better indicator than blood pressure. It's a better indicator of who's going to get sick and who's going to die than pretty much the way that it's been done here for the past 100 years.
So how does one measure grip strength?
Okay, I'm glad you asked.
Well, I know what my grip strength problem is. It's arthritis.
Yeah, but I suspect that yours is not as bad as you think it is, even with your arthritidity. And why do I say that? Because you survived cancer. You are beyond the norm. Even though you had a disease that could easily kill anybody out there, you're a survivor. So I suspect that even with the arthritis, you're going to do okay on this test. And I'm going to show you something that can instantaneously change grip strength. And that's the strength of the kind of work that I've been focusing on for the past 10 years. But first of all, to answer Dr. Dorio's question, the device is called a dynamometer. So dyne is a unit of energy, and meter is, you know, something that measures it. So a it's this thing. If people online can, on the Facebook channel can see it right now. I'm holding it in my hand. It's basically a handle that you squeeze, and there's a little dial that's attached to it. And when you squeeze this thing, it measures how much force you're able to generate in your hand. And the most recent study is highly refined. They're breaking it down. Normally, it's just broken down into men and women, age group, dominant and non-dominant hand. That's the tables that we've been using for the past 20 years, give or take, especially in injury. This new group, this new data set, also... I don't know why. I don't understand the science behind it, but these people are a lot smarter than me. So they also break it down into height. So not only is it a woman age 84, but it's how tall she is that makes a difference in these numbers. Now, I've been using these numbers for a very long time, and I don't understand how height factors into this, but apparently it does. I'm still going to continue to use my numbers because all I have to do is improve grip strength with what I'm doing, and I'm getting people out of the danger zone, which is my mission in the practice of healthcare.
Interesting.
So
grip strength.
Grip strength. So yeah, this is a dynamometer, and I'm sure I'm saying that wrong, but it's close enough. And nobody's going to care, really. So, and Barb, I'd like to, again, do this live on air.
Okay.
Test your dominant hand. You're going to squeeze the heck out of this thing, try and destroy it. See what the number is. See if you fall within what the number should look like. Maybe you won't, but I suspect you're going to be pretty okay, even with your arthritis. And then I'm going to do my thing, you know, how I treat you in the office.
Yeah.
And we're going to measure again and see if we can change that at all, because it's pretty interesting. So the researchers say that, you know, it is not specific. And what that means in science is it doesn't tell you exactly what's wrong. But it is really sensitive. So they say, well, it is sensitive, but it's not specific. So that warrants further testing. And some other researchers have turned this the other way. And they're saying that it should be used to exclude certain people from certain services. Like if they fall more than 10% out of the acceptable range, they should not go on a donor list. You know, they should not receive a transplant. They should not receive any kind of special treatment because they fall out of the group that are likely going to survive. Now, I'm not about that. I have a big problem with that in the field of medicine. However, they're using this information. Some of it, as far as I'm concerned, for the good, and some of it, exclusionary medicine, which I just hate with a passion.
Okay, now with dominant hand, do you mean the hand you write with?
Yeah, pretty much. That's typically what it is. I know a lot of people can do things in both hands, but usually the hand you write with is considered your dominant hand.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Okay.
So what do we do here?
Yeah, so you're going to grab this thing, and you're going to try and crush it. So
I'm going to grab it and crush it.
Just with one hand. Yep, just like that. Now, break it. Just break it. Crush it. Okay, beautiful. All right, you can relax.
Whoa.
Now.
Yep. That right. Wasn't easy to do.
No, it wasn't easy to do. But if you don't mind sharing, Barb, how old are you?
85, almost 86.
You're 85. So with deforming arthritidity, like your fingers are all over the place,
oh, yes,
right? So there's
terrible.
Significant damage there with a deforming arthritidity that should just make you fail instantaneously on this test, you are twice the grip strength of what is average for your
really?
Age group.
Wow, Barb.
Whoa, my goodness.
Yeah.
You're going to live over 100.
I hope so.
That's what I suspected. Remember building up to this, I said, you know, you were concerned that you weren't going to do okay because of your arthritidity. I was like, I don't think that's going to affect the outcome of what we're looking at here. And I gave you the rationale why, but I'm also going to, you know, hey, I'm going to take partial credit for this. You've been a patient of mine for 10 years, give or take.
Yes.
And I know that what I do and how I do it changes this stuff. I see it every day.
Well, I know after the car accident I was in, you were a big help.
Yeah. So you did phenomenal. You got 28 kilograms. So, you know, a lot of people are going to be like, I don't know what that means. And this is America. Right? So you generated 50 pounds of pressure in your dominant hand. 50 pounds per square inch.
50 pounds?
That is real good. That is real good.
I don't think I could even pick up 50 pounds.
I'm telling you, that's why we use this device. You far exceeded what is expected.
Good heavens.
That's a real good thing. But I'm going to see if I can make it even better. Are you up for that?
See, okay.
Okay, so we're going to do the thing that, you know, you're not the biggest fan of because you say it's uncomfortable. You like the other device better. And yes. I totally respect that. I get that. But when the other thing that, you know, the more acceptable vital statistic that is that American doctors are much more comfortable with looking at is blood pressure. And when blood pressure gets above a certain level, they're like, oh, no, you know, this is a medical emergency. We need to deal with this immediately. We were able to turn that around for you as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I know that this thing that I do that you don't feel like you like it so much. I get that. I understand. You don't like the way it feels, but it's powerful medicine.
Yeah, but it's very uncomfortable.
I understand. But I'd rather make you uncomfortable for a couple of minutes and be able to improve your grip strength and drop your blood pressure than just rub and massage you and make you feel better and have both of those things wind up, you know, possibly taking you out.
Okay, well, what do I do?
Okay, so
do I stand up?
Yeah, why not? Come on over.
Well,
so for those of you on the air, I mean, you're not going to obviously see this, but the Facebook group will see what we're doing here. But turn for me. And I'm just going to feel her neck. For something that feels a little too tight, a little too tense, doesn't feel like a happy joint right back here. And then I'm just going to take this device, commonly called an activator, but that may be like a copyrighted word, like Xerox instead of a copy machine, so we don't call it an activator. Strike that from the record. Mechanically assisted device to just put a little bit of impulse into that stuck joint. We do not twist or crack in my office.
Thank goodness.
Okay. No drama there, right?
No, but that just once?
Yeah, I want to see something. So, once again, 2, 4, 6, it's 7. So you were able to generate 27 kilograms of force in your dominant hand.
Okay. I have to do this again?
Yep. Now crush it. Destroy. Kill it. All right, good. We just got you up to 29.
Really? You're kidding me. With just one little bump?
Yeah.
Good heavens.
So for the average person, that difference, that is a 10% difference. It's actually a little bit better than a 10% difference. Or I can't do the math in my head. Let's just call it 10%. That 10% difference takes you out of the risk group. And we do it every
day. That's nice to know.
We do it every day with that little tiny tap.
And that was just one tap.
That
normally
one tap.
You've done 10 or 12
of
them.
Well, because I've got to with you. You got some stuff going on there. And it's necessary. But I just wanted to demonstrate, first of all, that this, outside of, you know, what you see on the news, this is an accepted test everywhere on the planet. It's not like some kind of weird alternative mumbo jumbo. I was able to find at least half a dozen published studies on this dating back for the past 15 years, some of them more larger groups than others. But I doubt outside of this program, anybody is going to hear about this, hear about the study that was published in OpenBMG, or all the PubMed studies that have been looking at this thing for the past, you know, 20 years, give or take.
Now, what about my other hand? Can we do my other hand?
Yeah, we can. I have numbers for non-dominant hand as well, and we're going to see. We'll see what that looks like. Go ahead. Kill it. Destroy. And relax. You sure it's your non-dominant hand?
Yeah, that's not the hand I write with. Okay. I'm a left-hander. I'm a lefty.
Okay, well, the test is telling me something different. But that's okay, because you're even better. You're even better with your non-dominant hand. You just, without anything, you just generated 30 kilograms of force, which is over 62 pounds per square inch.
And this
does she have more arthritis in one hand than the other, though?
No, they're all pretty bad. Both of them are pretty jacked up.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
But it's got nothing to do with the arthritis, obviously. You know, and you're not wrong, because anybody would assume that, oh, well, you're just going to fail this test miserably because of the arthritis in your hands. There's no way you could be close to normal. But I look past that. I knew intuitively, I don't care about the arthritis in your hands. You are a survivor. You are way outside of the norm. And it doesn't matter how bad the arthritis is in your hands are, you're going to blow this test away. And I predicted that before we even did it.
Oh, good heavens. Watch out, I'm coming for you, there everybody.
You yeah, so this
I'm alive
is interesting.
And kicking.
And I'm not suggesting that we change everything, but this, like I said, this test is used for good and bad, everywhere.
It's interesting. I've never seen that before.
Yeah.
Now, why wouldn't a doctor of arthritis have given me a test like that?
Because they're not trained that way.
Interesting.
You know, if that doctor of arthritis were doing, let's say, also doing injury work, like disability work, then maybe they'd have something like this. But rheumatologists typically aren't doing that kind of work. They're a specialist. They're going to, you know, do some blood work, you know, maybe advance some advanced imaging, and then they're going to prescribe some kind of either biological agent or anti-inflammatory agent.
Yeah, I know.
Or some combination of the two.
And I was on methotrexate for 6 years.
Yeah.
So one shot a week.
That's what they do.
And that's what caused my cancer.
No.
That was that was an offshoot.
No.
Getting cancer.
Yeah, that's not a fun trade.
No.
Yeah.
But who would have known that?
You know? I did.
Yeah.
And so that should have the doctor, and so should have you. You should have been disclose that.
Yes, but that
before
was,
you were even given that medication.
I don't think that was common knowledge.
Yeah, it was.
10 years ago.
I don't know if it was common or not, but I certainly knew about it, and so should your rheumatologist have, and should have informed you.
Well, the cancer didn't rear its ugly head until after they stopped making methotrexate.
Because it was giving people cancer.
Interesting. But it's still on the market, though.
Yeah, yep. Well, I wouldn't want anybody
just
I know
like
to take that.
Just like Enbrel is.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, I think we need to take a break. Wow, this is a very interesting session.
Okay.
I'm Barbara Cochran with my co-host, Dr. Jean Doreo, on your hometown station, 98.1 FM, AM 1220 KHTS. Feed me when I'm your hour. I'm Barbara Cochran with my co-host, Dr. Jean Doreo, on your hometown station, 98.1 FM, AM 1220 KHTS. And we're listening to Dr. Thomas Pawlucky after he's crippling me.
What? Come on. People are going to believe that.
No, didn't cripple me.
No.
But just made my one hand uncomfortable. Doesn't hurt, but it feels funny.
Yeah.
As compared to the other hand.
But we're utilizing it, though, Barb, for a prognosis.
Yes, that's true.
And according to the British Medical Journal, BMJ, there is a possibility that this could be reflective of your longevity. And wow. So your grip, yeah, your grip is very good.
Yeah,
so that's why we're saying you'll live to over 100.
Okay, that suits me.
So I never assume that anybody is listening to the whole show. People who are just turning in, we did the first segment about grip strength, and a recent study that was just published in Open British Medical Journal, which means that it's kind of like the online version of the British Medical Journal. 5,000 American subjects over the age of 50 were followed for a decade. And they were using grip strength using a device that I have here in the studio, commonly used in injury work and post-surgical physical therapy to determine, are we getting our grip strength back? Because, well, let's face it, you need your hands for just about everything you do, and it is a factor of ability or disability. So this is not a new or new agey device. This has been a standard in the diagnostic field for decades. It's been around as long as I have, and probably much longer than that. So I know for a fact this has been around for over 30 years, because that's how long I've been using it. So it is just a handle that you squeeze, and then there's a meter attached to it, and it tells you how much force you're able to generate in that squeeze. And there are tables for it to, show whether you have nerve damage or a muscle injury or an arthritis or something like that in your hand. But the interesting thing is that for at least the past decade, and I think it's been closer to two decades, large studies have been done everywhere, not just here, but everywhere around the planet. One of the big ones was done in Russia, but we weren't necessarily sharing so much information at that time, showing how this, and actually the Russian study just came right out and said it, that this is a better prognosticator. This is a better prognostic tool, a better indicator of morbidity and mortality than blood pressure.
That is extremely interesting.
Yeah. So the study, the one that was just published just recently, like I said, followed 8,000 seniors over the period of a decade, and they came up with essentially the same findings, that this is an excellent predictor of underlying illness and potential injuries that could shorten your lifespan.
Wow.
So what we did in the studio, for those of you just tuning in, where we had Barb check, because, she does have some arthritis. She is 85, and she is a cancer survivor. So one would think that, well, her test results aren't going to be so good, but I predicted that they were going to be good. Now, before this studio test, we hadn't run this in the office. It's not like I set you up for this. This is the first time you've seen this.
I know. Right? It's crazy.
So I predicted that you were going to blow these numbers out. And why do I say that? Because while the researchers have to be very careful about how they say things, and they can't be biased about what is what, they can only say that this is a very sensitive test, which means that it is going to be... it's going to find problems, but it's not very specific, which means that, well, they don't know what the problems are. They just know that there is a problem there. If this test is outside of the norm, outside of what they would expect. And these tables have been around for decades, and they're getting more and more refined as we do more and more research. And now they're to the point where they say that if there is a 10% difference from what you're actually testing to what it should look like, you are at a high-risk group of having an underlying illness that could result in a premature death.
So there will be some individuals whose grip strength is real good or even higher than normal, and that's probably not isn't a prognosis from that, but only if it's on the low, only on the low side, could that be indicative of a problem? So,
sure.
There are,
you know, like people who were, you know, maybe milk cows, or let's just say, you know, farmhands or something like that, who have unnaturally strong hands, aren't necessarily going to be a good candidate for this diagnostic tool. Somebody who uses their hands. And the researchers pointed out that, okay, we know some people are going to look at this and say, oh, well, all we have to do is give people exercises to make their hands stronger, and we're going to beat it. They knew that, you know, some people were going to interpret this data that way. But they say, no, that's not it. This is a good indicator of, is there something wrong in the body? Now, they can't say what, but they can say, now, if this shows that people are weak in their hands, weaker than they should be, not necessarily stronger than they should be, but weaker than they should be, there's a good bet that there's something wrong with that person. And in some cases, it's been suggested that if they are weak, they shouldn't be allowed to have certain life-saving procedures done because they don't think that they're going to be worth the risk.
And how about indicative of other things, like driving, for instance? I mean, if you don't have good grip in your hands, how do you hold a steering wheel? But also, could that be indicative of other muscle strength in the rest of the body in terms of reflexes?
Absolutely. So, but it even goes further than that. It even goes further than that. They're predicting like mental issues, like mental cognition, like early onset Alzheimer's. They're predicting many different things with this. They can't be specific about what the problem is, but they say if this problem does exist, further testing is absolutely warranted to try to track down why. And now I have, a fill-in-the-blank answer to what I believe, because I see it every day, and that is, if there is what I found in Barbara and what I demonstrated in the first segment, if there is an irritation in the joints of the neck, it creates a negative feedback loop into the brain that goes along the same pathway that pain follows. And when that happens, even if you don't have any pain in your neck, when that happens, it causes a short circuit in the brain that instead of going up into the cortex to be processed and go back out into the body and do whatever is necessary in order to fix the problem, it takes a sharp turn in a part of the middle of the brain called the thalamus and drops down into the pituitary, starts spewing out all of the stress hormones that, as I said earlier, pain itself will shut down strength, endurance, flexibility. Mm-hmm. It also shuts down a lot of other things, a lot of vital functions. It's necessary for that emergency response in order to, you know, not prioritize digestion or not prioritize detoxification, but prioritize get me the heck out of here so that I can survive this emergency. And that's what we've been conditioned for. The problem is most people are under some kind of chronic stress for most of their lives these days. And that chronic stress reaction instead of the healing response is one of the main things we focus on, first of all, in my office, but more importantly, I am now a published author. For those of you on Facebook can see the book, but you can get it on Amazon. It's called Guide to Self-Care, Tested Lifestyle Medicine Tips, Create and Automate Your Best Life Plan. This is the homework that I've been giving my patients for the past 30 years. And when I was, a lot of things that made me decide to write this book, but it started off with, I couldn't find this information You know, like, you know, just say, oh, well, go get this book or go do this or go do that. You know, they'd have to buy like 10 different books and get a sliver of the information. So I put it all together in a real easy read that covers all the bases.
Yes, cool. I have one of those books.
Does it cover all the bases, for instance, and to encompass everything we're talking about, you know, being deconditioned as we get older is very common.
Yep.
And getting ourselves into worthy shape, yep, by exercise.
Yeah, exercise is a whole there's four main subjects covered. It is rest, which is covered, like sleep and better sleep, exercise, stress management, and nutrition. Those are the four pillars of self-care, of lifestyle medicine, that need to be addressed in order for anybody to have, you know, less illness and injury in their life.
Right.
Very interesting. Now, you can continue on a similar but different subject. Do we have enough time to do that?
No, we're gonna go to break, and then we'll come back and talk about
something else. Okay, good. I'm Barbara Cochran with my co-host, Dr. Jean Doreo, on your hometown station, 98.1 FM, AM 1220 KHTS. Still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64? Welcome back to the Senior Hour. I'm Barbara Cochran with my co-host, Dr. Jean Doreo, on your hometown station, 98.1 FM, AM 1220 KHTS. And we're speaking with Dr. Thomas Palaki, a local chiropractor, and a very different chiropractor.
Yeah.
You agree?
So we've been talking in the first two segments about
grip strength.
A recent published study in the British Medical Journal followed 8,000 seniors over the course of a decade, and they found that a certain amount of grip strength is required at every age group in order to avoid the illness and injury. Now, they can't specifically indicate which illness or injury could possibly cause an untimely death from this test. It's not as specific as like taking blood pressure or measuring cholesterol. However, it can, and a lot of researchers feel that it is much more sensitive, and it needs further investigation if a person has a weaker grip strength than what is expected for their age group, for their dominant hand. And actually, the newest information, a refinement of the information that we've been using for decades, is their height. And I still don't understand why that is even a factor, but apparently it is a deciding factor. I'm sticking with the old tables because I've been able to do great work with just using the old tables. I don't know how much the height factor is going to alter these numbers at all. But to get back to your introduction of me, the work that I'm doing without twisting or cracking anybody measurably changes grip strength instantaneously, which is an interesting factor. It doesn't matter about arthritis because your hands are pretty banged up by arthritis and you are a cancer survivor. And so a lot of people would suspect that, yeah, maybe you're not going to test so well on this. And you even had your doubts. You were like, "Well, I don't know. My hands, I have a lot of arthritis in my hands."
I knew
that you were going to do well, and you far exceeded the norms. In fact, your results are, good for a 60-year-old.
Really?
Yep.
Good heavens.
Yeah.
Well, does that mean I'll live another 25 years?
Well, you know, I can't guess upon that, but I can say that you far exceed what is expected.
Wow, and that's good to hear.
Yeah, so certainly you can have a better than average reading. You know, it's when you have a less than average reading that, you know, gets people's attention, and or at least should. It should get every doctor's attention. Every doctor should add this to their vital statistics package, because you can't ignore this. This isn't just one small study. These are several studies, large studies, published studies over the past little more than a decade, and they're all coming up with the same thing. This is a very real number that people need to be looking at.
And I wonder why more doctors don't.
Well, it's just not in their training, and they don't have time to keep up with what they're currently doing.
Right, and plus the whole arena of medicine is evolving. You know, everybody thinks we know everything about medicine because we have a MRI and a CAT scan. Of course, we all know that's not true, because we can't always make a diagnosis. There's so often individuals where we don't know what's wrong, and the expectation is that because we're doctors and educated, we have all the tools, and we certainly don't. So, you know, this is all important information. The studies sound like good studies because of the number involved, and it's evidence-based. But, you know, we're still early in how medicine will treat us in 100 years. Or 200 years, or Star Trek VI, things are going to be changing. And grip strength, I think, is important and needs to be understood by the medical profession.
Yeah, I'm not going to wait. I'm not going to wait for 100 years for this to be adopted by the conventional medicine. In fact, I wrote a book, Guide to Self-Care Tested Lifestyle Medicine Tips, that address the lifestyle medicine, which is a very fast-growing, very popular new way of taking care of yourself. It covers the bases of rest, exercise, stress management, and nutrition. It's the information that I've been giving to my patients for the past 30 years that really makes a difference in their overall outcome instead of health.
Can you give us direction as to how we can find your book?
Yeah, it's on Amazon, and if you type in the entire title, it will hit. I mean, it just came out, so it's not ranking on the first page or the second page, but if you type in specifically Guide to Self-Care Tested Lifestyle Medicine Tips, it will absolutely show up there.
How about if we put your name in? Would that help?
Yeah, that'll do it too.
Get it there faster? Okay.
Yep.
Well, you know, Thomas, always great information that you're providing. You know, we value what you're providing education-wise for our listeners. How do our listeners and caregivers get a hold of you?
The best way to contact me, I would guess, for most of this audience is by phone, 661-753-9340.
That's 661-753-9340. And you are located?
Peachland, right here in Newhall.
Near Valencia Pharmacy?
Yeah, right across the hallway, as a matter of fact.
So easy parking, big parking lot for our seniors.
Close it out?
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Thomas Palucky, thank you so much for being on our show. Always great info from your profession. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We are sponsored by Comfort Keepers in Home Care, Providence Holy Cross Medical Center, and Hestia Med Spa. Listen to us next week on the Senior Hour. Now go and enhance your quality of life.